Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today we have Mark Livesay on from Treeline Pursuit. That is an online e-scouting course. So if you guys are hunters at all, you all know that e-scouting is a very important aspect of what we do. So listen into this podcast. There's a lot of information you can learn on this podcast and then go further in depth on his course. So I hope you guys enjoy it and learn a little bit. I know I certainly did. I thought I was a decent e-scouter, but after listening to this, I realize I am not. So hopefully you guys can learn some new tips here and put it into practice this season. But before I get you guys into that, make sure you guys check out the podcast on social media. It's Barely_Backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is C.Dillashaw. Make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share, all those good things. But without any further ado, I'll get you guys into the podcast with Mark. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barely Backcountry Podcast. Today we are joined by Mark Livesay. He is the man behind the Treeline Academy, the whole e-scouting program. So, Mark, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. So, real quick, before we get into all that, just kind of introduce yourself, tell people who you are, what you do, and then we can get into some other stuff.
All right. Well, Mark Livesay, and I'm originally from Missouri, and I've been in Montana for, this will be my 7th year. My wife and I moved out here 7 years ago with our 2 children, and we moved out here so that I could kind of get away from the rat race of running our own business. We've been entrepreneurs for, man, 25 years plus. So it was taking its toll on me, and I missed 2 elk seasons in the middle of all of those years, and those were bad years. Those were years my said it wasn't very fun to live with me. And because in the event business, at least in Missouri, a lot of our events happen in September, you know, so I was always trying to work around everything. And anyway, so we kind of stepped back from that. We moved to Montana so that I could kind of pursue this dream of hunting more. I really never dreamed, Caleb, that I would be in the quote outdoor industry. That was never the plan. I was retiring. I was just going to do some things to have fun. And I started recording some things, and I started, you know, I got invited on a couple podcasts, and I met Ryan Lampers. I met Brian Call, and we went on a hunt, and it just kind of happened that I thought that everyone looked at e-scouting and used Google Earth and all the tools and CalTopo and Gaia. I thought everybody did it. I thought, well, this is just common knowledge. Mm-hmm. Well, the more people I talked to, the more I realized that that was not the case. And it was far from the case. And so I recorded a couple of YouTube videos that were, I mean, huge, Caleb, like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And they got so much response. People were messaging me saying they watched them 3 times and this and that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What are you having trouble going to sleep at night or what? And so then I just had this idea. I said, you know what? I think I'm going to take all this stuff that I've learned and I'm just going to put it in a course. And if people want to do it, great. If they don't, that's great. And that was about 2.5 years ago. That was actually about 3.5 years ago. It took me about 1.5 years to do it. And then it's been gangbusters ever since. So, you know, and then here we are today. Now I'm kind of doing more and more and more. And, you know, I kind of stay in my lane, Caleb. I'm one of those guys that, you know, I shouldn't say hate. That's a strong word. It really irks me sometimes when a bunch of people are doing things or are claiming to do things that they really don't have a lot of expertise in. Right. And
yeah.
So you notice that my course is not called How to Hunt Elk, right?
Yeah.
I've killed a lot of elk. I kill a lot of elk, but I have never killed a bull over 350. Well, I've never killed a bull over 325. Let's just be honest. And now I want to, I'm trying to, but I'm from Missouri. So until I moved here, I had a hard time letting bulls go by. I mean, I just shoot anything came by. Right.
Yep.
And but what I am good at is I'm pretty good at finding elk, and the killing part, I'll leave that to Corey Jacobson over at Elk 101 or whatever.
Yeah.
So my courses, I mean, there's some tips and strategies, a few things I do in there. But for the most part, it's how to put yourself in position to find elk. Not only find them, but how to get a plan together. Really, that's really the nuts and bolts is Okay, so now you've identified some of these places. What's your strategy? What's your approach putting a hunt plan together for however many days you're going to go? And so that's really the background, of the course. And then, I have more than that, but I have three or four passions, and one of them is elk hunting. I've been elk hunting, like I said, I'm from Missouri, but I've been elk hunting elk. I think this is my 33rd year. So driving, and that's the other reason. If I'm good at e-scouting, it's because I had to. I mean, I'm from Missouri. So we drove out here and we just picked places on the map and we studied them and we went to them and we killed elk. And, so a lot of it was out of necessity, and I'm an adventurer. I say this all the time, Caleb, but I do not like to go to the same places twice. And that's probably to my detriment. But I just love new places. And I love the process of breaking down new places, figuring out. There's nothing I like better than going to a trailhead with my llamas, pulling up in the middle of the night, sleeping in the truck or in the trailer with the llamas, getting up and packing in the dark to a brand new place I've never been to in my life, and getting in there and hearing an elk bugle right at daylight. That is like what floats my boat. And there's just something about those new places. So that's the other reason that I think I've gotten good at e-scouting is because I am constantly, even today, developing new places. And I get to hunt a lot. I'm blessed. I hunt elk for 60 plus days a year. And I have 3 to 5 elk tags a year. And I hunt multiple states every year, at least three, 2 to 3 max, every year, all the time. And so that's really how I've honed my craft, so to speak. So that's really the first angle. And then the second is, I have llamas. I love llamas. I got llamas when I moved out here. I'm 57 years old. I just mentioned I'm blessed to hunt a lot of days. Well, let's just be honest. At 57 years old, I still work hard. I still get in best shape I can get in. But, Father Time is catching up on me. And I can't do these back-to-back 12-day hunts. There's sometimes I'll do 3 12-day hunts in a row. And they're brutal on you physically. And so the llamas have really helped me do things at a whole nother level. So I love that. And then I do my own meals. We were talking about before we jumped on is I've been making my own meals for 10 years, and more guys and women are interested in that. So I'm working on that. That's my next project is Ryan Lampers and I are working on a meals thing that we can teach people how to do their own meals, both dehydrated and freeze-dried methods. And so we're doing that. And then bear hunting is by, I didn't get a chance to bear hunt a lot. I killed a lot of bears. I shouldn't say a lot. I killed several bears, but they were always accidental bears, Caleb. Like I'd be elk hunting and a bear would come by, right? But I never really went and targeted bears until I moved here. And when I moved to Montana, it's been Katie bar the door on bears. I'm literally addicted to bear hunting. And that's really how I met Ryan and Brian, and was through bear hunting, really. And so now I think I'm going to hunt bears 44 days this in the starting next month. And I love bear hunting. And so I really want to do a bear e-scouting course because I feel like I've got a lot to offer there as well. So anyway, that's it in a nutshell. So now I'm just living the dream. I'm in Montana. I'm hunting like Nutsoville. I've got a crazy understanding wife. My son's 13 now, so he's starting to turn into a little killer. So now my problem is I had children later in my life. I married a young wife. That's what happens. And now he's going to kick my ass, and it's coming. I mean, I can already feel the pain. But it's good. It's going to keep me young. So that's probably more than you wanted to know, but there you go.
No, cool, man. Well, before we get into all the e-scouting stuff, I just want to hear like a recap of the hunting season that just wrapped up a few months ago. How did that go for you?
Epic year. So started off, I had an Idaho tag archery and I was solo for a couple weeks. And I went into this new area, again, brand new area, region I'd never been in, never drawn this tag before, never even drove through the area. So I go down there and there are literally bulls everywhere. And I get on a couple that are just, I can't shake it. I'm addicted to them, right? So I spent 10 days solo on this bull, living with this bull, following this bull, and I could not, I just couldn't get it done. Hold on, sorry, I'm gonna. Dog was barking.
You're good.
I'm going to, so I chased this bull and I just dogged him. Couldn't do it, couldn't get him to cooperate. They just were, they were calling, they were bugling a lot, but they were not responding much. So anyway, I go back home. I take a couple of days. I come back for 10 more days. I still can't. I pick up on this bull again. Still can't get it done. I mean, everybody's like, well, what kind of hunter are you? 20 days, you can't kill a bull? I'm like, oh, well. So then my buddy comes from Missouri. We go in there. Can't get this bull killed. So I spent literally a month chasing a bull. And it just didn't work out, but it was fun, man. I love that stuff, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's almost, in some ways, like, I'm glad it worked out that way. And now I would sure have loved to kill that bull, but, man, to spend a month kind of in this area, it was a fantastic spot. So that's how off I invested a lot of time, probably way too much time on that bull. So I neglected Wyoming. I mean, not Wyoming, but Montana. I really didn't get a chance to go into Montana until later season. Oh, and, wow. But I knew my son was, you know, I just said my son's 13 and he's not quite ready for archery yet. He just can't pull the weight. And yeah, he's just not reliable enough with his accuracy.
Yep.
So he's rifle hunting. So I knew we were going to be doing some rifle stuff. And, well, let me back up a little bit first. So bear season was epic. We killed some fantastic bears in the spring of last year. And some of our videos are going to be coming out in the next few weeks. Right. So we killed a fantastic honey bear. I killed a blonde, my first blonde bear. It was just an epic country, rafting a river and a blow up raft to get to him. It was, I mean, it had all the elements. So it's going to be I think it's going to be fantastic. Right. So then rolling in, you know, just hunted really hard through the season and spent a lot of time with some good friends. And then met up with Brian, Carl. We went in to Montana for mule deer season, and we ended up, the video just came out a few months ago. We killed two really nice bucks together, a double header, which was kind of rare for us, especially on camera. Uh-huh. You know, I had to run the camera for the first time. It was kind of, if I do say so, it was pretty epic. And so we killed two real nice bucks on camera. My son killed a nice buck. And then we killed two elk as well. So we killed three bucks and two elk in 6 days. And two elk, three bucks in 6 days. Yeah. And late season, blizzard conditions, super cold, gnarly, just the way we like it, right?
Yep. And
so it was a great season, dude. I mean, freezers are full. But now I've been spending I'm supposed to be working on my new meals course. We're filming this weekend. I'm supposed to be writing copy, and I keep finding myself e-scouting bear spots.
There you go.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of in a nutshell. We had a pretty good season. I did not kill a bull with a bow, and I'm really bummed about that, but this next year is going to be a whole different story. I'm going to dedicate. I got a really, really, really badass Idaho tag this year. So I got so lucky. I got super lucky. And waiting in line like everybody does in Idaho.
Yeah.
And it's a nightmare. And but we got lucky. And it's going to be an epic hunt. I'm going to really dedicate a lot of time to that hunt. And right now I only have two elk tags. So, I mean, I know that's a lot. I'm not being disrespectful to that. I realize the gift I have, but
yeah.
So I'm either going to get a Utah tag or I'm going to do Colorado. I haven't made up my mind. I'm kind of hoping, like you and I were just talking, I'm kind of hoping that Arizona hits my credit card here pretty quick.
Yeah.
I'm on the verge. I'm chasing point creep though, Caleb, in Arizona.
Yeah.
I need a few guys to kind of give up, or I need them to switch to another unit.
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe one day.
Yeah.
You, the problem you run into on that is once you invest so many years in drawing, it's hard to take a step back and take a lesser unit, right?
Yeah.
And I keep telling myself, I'm like, Livesey, you're going to be like 97 years old when you draw this deck. And you need to just go hunt.
Yeah.
And so I may have to, you know, but man, these 9s, 10s, 27s, 23s.
Yep.
Even one. I mean, those units are just, they're hard to get.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of hanging in the game, see if I can pull it off.
Yep. Yeah, Arizona's tough. I mean, Arizona, there is point creep, but the way their draw works, there is always a chance, even with 0 points.
Yeah, but let's
very be slim chance, but it 0, is
0.0001%, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what I keep telling myself, Kayla. I keep telling myself that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, well, I know a guy that drew a Arizona sheep tag this last season with 0 points.
So. Oh, man, don't tell me enough stories.
I mean, it's probably the least desirable unit in the state, but it's still a sheep tag. So,
yeah, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but cool. Well, you mentioned you got a couple elk tags coming up this year, and you're getting ready to go on a bear hunt here in a little bit. You said you're going for like 40 days hunting bear?
Yeah, I got 3 bear tags as of right now. I may end up getting a 4th tag. We got a lot planned. I mean, we've just got – it looks like I'm going to be doing a hunt with Gritty on Gritty Films like we've been doing, which is always fun with Brad and Brian and Ryan. And then I'm going to be with Ryan and one of our new film guys on a hunt. And then I'm thinking about also doing a hunt with Peaks. I've been doing a lot of stuff with Peaks Equipment, which I love their stuff. And so I'm thinking about doing a exclusive kind of film with them. And so I got a lot in the works. But man, it's going to be a really challenging year because, you know, I'm big about studying snow levels. And a lot of guys don't do that. And I don't really understand why.
Yeah. I can tell you that's messed me up before. I've tried to go on one bear hunt. Me and a buddy went to Idaho, and the snow is what killed us. We just couldn't get to any of the spots we had e-scouted
because of
snow, and it just screwed us up. So,
well, you should have met me before then because, there's about 5 or 6 tools, and I don't know how much you want to get into it, but so I did a podcast last year, a webinar. I did a 2-hour webinar last year on snow analysis for spring bears and how you can pinpoint not only where the snow is, but how deep it is, how fast it's melting, looking at live aerial photos to just see where the snow is and studying the roads. Can you drive in? Can you drive out? Right. You know, all those problems you were just talking about it. Well, so I'm not going to say it never happens, but rarely do we go to a bear spot that we have trouble driving in and we don't know exactly where that snow is because I make it science out of it. Because it's so unpredictable and you can waste so much time if you don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
And if you just, you know, a lot of these places you e-scout and look, oh man, this looks amazing, right? It's at 6,000 feet. It's going to have bears all over it. Well, the snow level's at 5,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And you might run into some grizzlies up there in that snow, but so like every year it changes. And like last year, I studied and studied and studied. And even right up to the week we left, we had to make some modifications because last year, I don't know if you remember, we had a really cold spring and it just was not, the snow was just not receding. And so we made some adjustments, went into kind of a new spot. Dude, now the problem we ran into in the first spot was we filmed on film 8 separate grizzlies. So we had grizzlies all over. We had to shoot at 2 of them in our camp to scare them away. And so we literally were covered up in grizzlies. And the main reason was because I think the main reason was the snow was so low that it just was concentrating everything. The elk were in there. The deer were in there. The grizzlies were in there. And I think the black bears had moved out because they couldn't operate in that with that many grizzlies around. That's like they would just get eaten, right? And so we ran into one black bear in that spot. That bear was running for his life. I've never seen a bear run like that. And so I just, we made a move to another drainage, and we killed a beautiful bear, you know, a really beautiful chocolate cinnamon bear. It was in a honey tree, and he was getting honey out of this dead tree. And it was epic. And that's one of the films that will be coming out this spring. But the point is, we had to make adjustments because of the snow levels. Mm-hmm. And so learning how to do that, and Caleb, not just for bears,
yeah.
Learning the snow level tools is important for late season elk hunters as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I mentioned that we went on this late season hunt and we killed two elk. We went exactly where the snow was. We knew where it was. I'd already studied it. We marched in there. We knew where we were going. We camped in the right spot. And then in 2 days, we had two elk down. But if we would have just blindly rolled in there, I don't know if we would have been in the right spot.
Yeah.
So anyway, I hope that you guys that are listening to this kind of start, and it kind of piques their interest into looking at ways to analyze snow. So like I said, I did a webinar. It's part of my e-scouting. Right now, it's setting in my e-scouting elk course in the webinar section. But eventually, it will live in the new bear course that I'm working on.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about doing another one this spring. I'm thinking about doing another live event. If I have time, I'm going to do it. So I really love doing them. It's more of the time commitment to do it. So anyway, that's kind of the way we approach it. And like I said, you know, when you're planning out your seasons, especially for bears, when snow is a big deal, you really got to know where that snow line is. Yeah. And you got to work that snow line. Meaning, you don't want to be right on the snow line. Okay. I think that's a mistake.
Okay.
Because the green is not happening right at the snow line. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It has to melt off. It has to move up the mountain a certain degree before the sun warms up the ground. Mm-hmm. The green starts sprouting. The little glacier lilies start busting through. So I find that magic zone is about 750 to 1,000 feet in elevation below the snow line.
Okay.
So wherever you find that snow line at, you want to try to position yourself, you know, 750 to 1,000 feet below that snow line. And I feel like that's the money spot, because that's right where everything's starting to green up. And those bears particularly, they love that new green, right? Like sometimes you'll even glass it, Caleb, and you can't even, with your naked eye, you can't see green. It looks brown.
Yeah.
But when you put the glass on it, you'll start to see green. And particularly we like to see is those glacier lilies, little yellow flowers. They're like cracked bears. So when we find those, and we find those little green benches or little green shelves with maybe a little trickle of water running out, oh man, those are money spots. And but you have to be in the right position relative to the snow line.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, you know, that's just my two cents on it.
No, it makes sense for sure. And like you said, I definitely wish I would have talked to you a couple years ago before I drove all the way up to Idaho and got screwed over by snow for a week.
Well, now you're going to have to go again. The bear hunting is just like, oh man, it's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because we're cooped up all winter and we're just ready to get out and do something. But it's so challenging. Like the success rates on bears are not particularly high. And so it's challenging, which we like.
Yeah.
It's pretty physically demanding because, man, the country where these suckers live is not, especially in the spring when they're coming out of hibernation, it's not always, certainly ain't easy. Yeah. And, but it's addicting and we love it.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, what about, I mean, I know you mentioned elk is kind of your big thing along with bears. So let's get into like the e-scouting for elk. So draw results will be coming out here pretty soon. People will start knowing what units they drew. So as soon as somebody knows they have an elk tag, they know what unit, where are you starting for your e-scouting for elk?
Okay. Well, the first thing, you know, it's kind of an onion, I guess a good way of saying it, Caleb, there's a lot of layers to this. So in my opinion, again, I want to preface this. This is my way, guys. This is maybe it's the best way. Maybe it's not. It's my way. And I've had incredible success finding elk, right? And I'm not bragging, but in the past 5 or 6, since I moved to Montana, I can't remember a spot. And there might be one, there might be two, I don't know. I can't remember any that we went into and didn't get into elk. And that's a pretty good track record for elk hunting. Now, we didn't always kill an elk in there, but we were in them. And we had opportunities. We had shot opportunities. We had calling opportunities. My buddies, we've killed lots of elk. And so we've got a pretty good track record in that capacity. But like I said, it's kind of an onion approach. Now, I have a certain kind of so-called order that I work through, but you certainly don't have to work in a very rigid order. Mm-hmm. But there are components that I feel like you have to do when you're thinking about preparing a hunt plan. And that's what I want to start off with. So, guys, before you ever start e-scouting, what I recommend is that you start thinking about what do you want to accomplish with all this work? Yes, you're going to open up your computer on your desk. You're going to start zooming around here, looking there, looking at roads, looking at north faces, looking at all these features. But what are you going to do with all of that work? And that's where I think a lot of guys drop the ball, is they just drop a bunch of random waypoints on their screen. Mm-hmm. And when you look at, let's say they're using, I don't want to give too many recommendations. Let's just say hunt application A. And let's say that the default color is red, like the waypoint is red. I see so many guys screen, it looks like a sea of red. It means nothing. It's just waypoints everywhere. There's no method to it. There's no color coding. There's no icon legend. They're not marking certain things a certain way. They're not prioritizing anything they're doing. They're just dropping random waypoints. Well, then when you come back to that a couple months later, because remember, it's, what is it, March?
Yeah.
And elk season is September.
Yeah.
So you come back in September and you're like, okay, what did I mean by that point? What did I mean by that? What did I mean by that? Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah.
It happens to everybody, right? Including me, even today. So what I'm telling people to do first, and this is to think about what your end product is. And what I recommend is you use a hunt plan. I call it a hunt plan. It's simple. It's not simple, but the terminology is simple. Mm-hmm. And really, it's a strategy document. Okay, it's all of the markups that you're doing, all of the e-scouting you're doing, organized into a strategy. And in that hunt plan, okay, think of your hunt plan as your master document for your entire, let's say you're doing a 14, let's say you're doing a 10-day hunt. Mm-hmm. So this hunt plan is designed for a 10-day hunt. Well, inside that hunt plan are individual hunt areas, and this is important. This is another downfall to a lot of Western hunters. They get invested in spot A. Caleb is sitting at his computer. He's like, oh my gosh, this is the holy grail spot.
Yep.
This is it. There's going to be elk on top of elk. And so he works and works and works and works on plan A. And they get out there and something's wrong with plan A. Like, there's no elk there for some reason. There's a road that was open that they thought was closed. There's too many people that think it's a great spot as well. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case may be. And then Caleb's got to make a move or got to do something. But what I see guys do is they really don't have a plan B.
Yep.
And even if they do have a plan B, they don't really have it fleshed out. Right? They don't have it worked out like they did plan A. They put all of their marbles into plan A, and plan B was just kind of a second thought, an afterthought.
Yeah.
So what I recommend guys do with a hunt plan, now this is a lot of work, right? But hey, Are you going to be a 10% success elk hunter like the average? Or are you going to be more? That's what you have to ask yourself. The average success rate for a DIY public land archery elk hunter is less than 10%. So if you want to kill an elk one every 10 years or less, then keep acting like that. That's just fine. But if you'd like to kill an elk 2 out of 10 or 3 out of 10, 7 out of 10, well, then you're going to have to up your game a little. And part of that is going in with a solid plan. So what I recommend, like on a 10-day hunt, is that you have 3 to 5. I know that sounds like a lot, but 3 to 5 hunt areas all planned out. So that when you have a problem with one, you can immediately move to two, immediately move to three. And when I say planned out, I'm talking how what's the drive time? What's the drive route? Where's my first camp? How far in is my first camp? How long is it going to take me to hike into that camp? So I know when I leave spot A, if I get to spot B and I start hiking by three, I can be there by dark. If you planned that level, you got so much confidence, Caleb, moving to plan B. But when you don't know where you're going to camp, you don't even know how you're going to drive over there. You don't know how far it is in. You don't even know what the trailhead looks like. You're going to be a lot less likely to make that move. But if you've got it all planned out, you're going to be very likely to make a move. And I can't tell you how many elk we have killed in our second spot or our third spot. Now, there is nothing wrong with being excited about your first spot. Nothing wrong with that. You should be excited about the first spot. That's kind of the whole point. But what I try to do, and it's hard to do, but when I try to set up five, four, let's say I'm setting up three hunt areas or four, I try not to get too invested in them at this time of year. Right? I try not to say this is my number one or this is my number two. I let it evolve, and I try to give them all equal attention. So when I'm looking at, now, when I say hunt areas, I'm not talking about Caleb hiking down the trail 5 more miles. I'm talking about physically packing up and making a move in most cases. Right? I mean,
absolutely.
that's what I'm talking about. You're like, maybe not 500 miles away. I'm talking maybe another mountain range, the other side of the mountain, maybe down the road 20 miles. Whatever, but a significant relocation. So there's a lot more to it than that, and we probably can't get into all of it. But I think that to start with, so many people jump on their computers and they start dropping waypoints, right? Okay, and that's fine. But I think a better strategy is to think about, before you start, think about, okay, what's my end goal? How many days do I have to hunt? How many hunt areas do I need to develop? You can use my template that comes with my course, or you can give your own, whatever. And you start laying it out. There's not going to be anything on it yet, but it's all labeled. It's all ready to go. And then you start working. So one of the first things I do is I like to just get the big picture over. I call it big picture overview, Caleb. I like to step back on Google Earth. I use Google Earth more than any tool. The main reason is because the imagery is just better than anything else.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
the 3D is better. Everything's better. I'm sorry. The hunting apps just aren't there yet. Now, do I use hunting apps? Of course I use them. In the field, they're invaluable. Invaluable. But when you're on your pre-hunt e-scouting work, I highly recommend you use your hunt app and Google Earth side by side. When you use those tools together, and I'll just be honest with you, I use 3 or 4 hunting apps. So I like to think of e-scouting as a toolbox, right? I use the right tool for the right job. And some of these hunting apps are really good at private land. Some of these hunting apps are really good with elevation analysis. Some of these are really good with planning routes and looking at profiles and how steep it is. So I use what tool is really good at what function I'm trying to do. And I think a lot of hunters become one-dimensional, Caleb. They use one. Oh, they're like, oh, I'm a XYZ app guy. I'm like, yeah, me too. No, I mean, that's all I use. I'm like, okay. I'm like, so when you work on your car, do you only use a screwdriver? Is that to fix a car, right? And but it's so funny. I talk to so many hunters that are like, "Oh, well, I bleed red. I only use this. I wear the hat. I wear the shirt. I
Yep.
wear the." I'm like, "Okay, me too." But I'm also using Gaia GPS. I'm also using Gohan. I'm also using Google Earth. I'm also using CalTopo. I'm also even using FatMap. I'm using live serial, fresh set satellite imagery. I'm using all these tools combined.
Yeah.
And now when I go into the backcountry, I am using one primary hunting app. I choose whichever one meets the need. If I'm operating in super steep country like bear season, I'm just going to tell you straight up, I have to have the pure USGS topographic maps, and Gaia GPS is the winner. Okay, sorry, it's just the way it is. And but if I'm going to eastern Montana and private land is an issue, like I'm really navigating private land, then I'm using another tool. If I'm going to an area that being, remember we talked about, like I want to stay on a specific elevation and I need elevation bands. Well, there's a tool. GoHunt is incredible with elevation bands. So I think you're getting what I'm saying here. I hope your
Yeah,
listeners are paying
definitely.
attention to this, is that I kind of spent a lot of time on that, but it's important. And learning how to use multiple tools and learning the benefits and the positives and the negatives of each one will turn you into a better hunter overnight. There's probably nothing you could do to elevate your success rate than becoming multidimensional when it comes to elk hunting, learning multiple tools, multiple hunt areas. I mean, the more diverse you become, your odds are automatically going up. And so that's step one, is I want to step back and I want to look at the big picture. And I almost always use Google Earth Pro for that because of lots of reasons, right? Like we said, there's no better 3D view than Google Earth. Now, the hunting apps, I will give them credit. They are catching up and they are getting better and better and better.
Absolutely.
So there may be a day when you don't need Google Earth. But the problem with Google Earth, we'll just get into it. The problem is it when you download it and you install it, it only is aerial imagery. And everybody's like, "Oh, okay, that's great. The imagery's great, but man, I really wish it had topographic maps. I really wish it had all the fires so I could see where all the fire borders were, like I can with my hunting app." Excuse me. I wish it had private land borders, public land borders. I wish it had all the roads and all the trails. And I wish it told me which ones I could drive on, which ones I can't. I wish it had all the migration corridors for all the where all the elk are migrating and the deer are migrating. I wish it had all the cattle layers where all the grazing was going on so I could figure out, I could work around cattle grazing issues. Like I hate hunting areas that graze sheep. I'm just going to tell you, I hate it. Now cattle, I don't worry about as much, but sheep, I don't like it. So I want to know if I'm marching into spot A, are they grazing sheep there? But there's a way to figure that out. So I spent a year after I built the eScouting Elk course, I spent another year building these toolkits, Caleb, and that's what I just launched a couple weeks ago. And these toolkits, everything I just mentioned, snow, topographic, fires, current fires, livestock, roads, migrations, all the trailheads, recreational features, everything is all installable with these right into Google Earth. So when you open up Google Earth, you can click anything you want to see and you can turn it on and off, just like you can with your hunting apps, in some ways even easier. So they've been game changing. So I've always been using this, but I really didn't have a solution to give to other people until I built these toolkits. And I don't have them for every state yet. I built Montana, Colorado, Wyoming, and Idaho. Because those are the four kind of main over-the-counter, so to speak, easier to get. I want to do an Arizona one. I want to do a New Mexico one. But oh, also the hunting unit boundaries, right? All that's included. And I think they're game changing. They have changed the way. It's so nice to pull your Google Earth window and it has all the fires. And then you're looking at your hunting app. You're using Go Hunt. You're looking at the screen and it's similar.
Yeah.
So, and it's even better in some regards because these hunting apps, for example, they only go back about 10 or 12 years for fires.
Okay.
I don't think people realize that. Like they only do show you 10 years of fires. Well, what if that fire is 12 years old? Do you want to know about it? You better want to know about it, because let me tell you the problem that comes with a 12 to 15 year old fire is all that timber's on the ground. And it's going to be brutal. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going there, Caleb. That doesn't mean I'm not going there. But what it does mean is I want to know about it
Yeah.
so I can plan around it. I want to see where the borders of that old fire are. So it's a weak link with all the hunting apps, guys. It's a weak link. But if you follow my strategy of what? Using multiple tools, and you've got your Google Earth with all your 40, I've got the toolkit that has 40 years of fires in it. So you can see all the fires back to 40 years, and you can turn them on and off by year.
Okay, nice.
So, like, I'm just gonna, man, oh, I can't believe I'm gonna give this tip out. So right now I'm planning bear hunts, and I want to know where all the two in this area, this whole big area we're thinking about hunting. I want to know where all the 2000 and the 2021 and even the 2022 fires are.
Yeah.
So where can you do that at? You can't do it anywhere except for Google Earth with my toolkits. It's the only way. So, because you can't turn on the year of the fire. Now, Go Hunt allows selection by years,
Yes.
but they don't have the 22 fire in there yet.
Yep.
I'm not throwing them under the bus. I'm just saying I'm using the right tool. When it comes to fire analysis, there's only one tool for me, and it's my fire layer in Google Earth. That's it. Now, once I see where the border is and I see where the fire is, I might jump over to Go Hunt and do some work, right? I might drop some waypoints. So I'm using them side by side, is what I'm saying. And I hope that's not too much in the weeds. I hope that's kind of what you're looking for. So I think the big picture overviews is really a great step because you just want to kind of look at the country, see how it lays out. You want to kind of just get a feel for it. And then the step two, and this is probably where we can go further, but this is something where so many people drop the ball. Step two is excuse me, you have to understand where the roads are in your area. And not only where they are, what roads are open, what roads are closed, what roads allow motorcycles, what roads allow ATVs, what roads this, that, everything. You have to know it, and you have to know it well. Well, let's say you use hunting application A. Do you think hunting application A is 100% right on roads all the time?
No.
If you believe that, then you're making a mistake.
Yep.
Now, there are some that are better than others. There's no doubt. But what I spend a lot of time, I look at hunting app A, hunting app B, hunting app C, and do the roads match? Okay. Is there any discrepancies? Am I seeing anything that looks different? Because if I start seeing differences, I'm like, okay, I got to start digging in here. Something's up. So I start studying differences. And then I go to CalTopo. And I talk about this in a couple of podcasts I've done in the past. Their motor vehicle analysis is second to none, but almost nobody uses it for hunting.
Okay.
CalTopo is an incredible site. And I hope the people listening to your podcast are catching on to this. It's free. Now, they have a paid version, but you don't have to pay. I pay because I want access to some of the other tools they have, but the motor vehicle part is free.
Okay.
So it's a great way to double check these hunting apps. And then the third step is to go to the ones I'm really, really, really interested in, spot A. Then I'll go to the National Forest Map travel management page, and I'll download the most current travel management PDF. And I don't know if you've ever looked at one of these, but they're pretty cryptic, right? They're kind of hard to read, hard to understand. But what you do, this is the final step. I've got it laid out on my desk, and I'm looking at it for my hunt area, and I'm matching it to what I'm seeing on the screen. And what I'm looking for is discrepancies again. I'm looking for things that are marked here that are not marked there. I can tell you real quick, one of my best elk hunting spots that I have ever been to was a mistake that I found using this analysis. I found a road that they said was open on all the maps.
Yeah.
But when I got the PDF, it says it was closed. And when I rolled up to the trailhead, there was an outfitter there, and we were talking, and he said, "Hey, how'd you find this spot?" I said, "Well, I studied the motor vehicle." He goes, "Well, it's wrong on the." I said, "Yeah, I know. That's how I found it. I went a little further." I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you're the first person I've ever seen here." And I'm like, "Well, I'm here now." He says, "Well, it's a good spot." I said, "Well, I kind of thought it was going to be. It's got every feature I'm looking for elk."
Yeah.
And there was a mistake with the access.
Yep.
So my point was, I would have never found that little honey hole if I wouldn't have went two, even three steps further with the motor vehicle analysis. So I know that was kind of long winded, but I hope that was some good tips for you.
No, I love it. No, I mean, I'm learning a ton here. I mean, I thought I was okay at e-scouting. Now I'm realizing I'm not good at all. So I'm definitely learning a ton, and I'm sure I'm going to go back and listen to this podcast multiple times as we go through e-scouting season this year. So,
well, I think that number one, getting the big picture overview is a great way to start. Number two is really understanding how motor vehicles move around the area, right, to the nth degree. And I hope that you're getting the trend here. So we talked about using multiple apps, right? And then what did we just talk about with motor vehicles? Using multiple resources. It's all about becoming multidimensional. Everything in my approach is about using multiple angles.
Yeah.
Because when you use multiple angles, you start to see a much clearer picture.
Yeah. I think that could be said for any part of hunting, not just e-scouting. Like when you're in the field chasing elk, having multiple tactics, whether it's calling or spot,
that's right, exactly, hunting,
like every single aspect of hunting, you have to have multiple tools in the tool bag to be able to pull out.
Well, and I find that hunters, and this is, you know, I used to be, back in my younger skinny days, I used to be a triathlete, and I did 10 Ironmans back in my day, and I loved racing travel. I raced all over the world, Brazil, Germany. And I just loved it, right? Well, I was a really, really good cyclist. I was bigger. I was 170-pound triathlete, which is huge for triathlon. And so the bike part was just a natural for my size and my strength.
Yeah.
Well, what did I do? My first years racing, I rode my bike, because I loved it. I was good at it. I worked my strengths. Well, did that make me a better triathlete? No, it did not. Because I was getting minutely better on the bike, Caleb, right? But I neglected my running. I neglected my swimming. Now I was doing it all, but I was not. I was way more focused on cycling. And when I finally had the epiphany to say, Mark, quit training your strengths and start training your weaknesses, all of a sudden, I dropped 2-3 hours off my Ironman time. I qualified for the World Championships in Hawaii. My wife and I both went there in 2002. And I would have never done it if I wouldn't have come to the realization that I had to let my strength set while I worked on my running. So I started running marathons. I hated running marathons.
Yeah.
And because they're brutal. Running the marathon, to be honest, is worse than the Ironman. And so, but I remember, I'm 170 pounds. So I'm a big triathlete. So I'm starting to run. I'm running with guys that are way faster than me. And guys were telling me, I said, I'm going to run a 3-hour marathon. And guys are like, dude, you're way too big to run a three. There's no way you're going to run a 3 hour. That's a, like a 7 minute mile pace for you guys that are trying to do the math.
Yeah.
For 26 miles.
Yeah.
And sure as heck, I go to a marathon. I'm super fit. I've been running. And I run like a 301 or a 302. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this Ironman. And yeah. I go into that Ironman and I killed it. But I'm not saying that. I'm only saying this to point out that I see hunters that shoot their bow all the time. They're incredible shots.
Yep.
But their calling sucks.
Yeah.
And then I'll see great callers that couldn't hit the side of the barn. And then I'll see guys that, you know, they've got incredible hunt plans. And they know exactly what to do, but their gear is terrible. And as soon as it starts raining, as soon as it starts gets cold, they can't stay out. And they're just not tough enough. And then I see guys that they've got it all, but they're just not in shape to go where they need to go.
Yep.
So, guys, you've got to work your strengths. And I have found that a lot of guys love their gear, love their shooting. They even work out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But they neglect the hunt planning part. You can't kill an elk if you can't find one. I don't care how good a shot you are. I don't care how fit you are. I don't care what kind of gear you got. It means nothing if you can't put yourself where the elk want to be. And so I say that all the time, but it's so true. So anyway, I hope that that kind of opens a little bit of eyes. And guys, and I'm not saying this because I'm an expert at all this. I spent 33 years figuring this out. And I'm a slow learner. So but you got to think about it. So another thing I'll say, Caleb, is in my opinion, there's only two ways to become a better elk hunter. It's experience is number one.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's say you go elk hunting 10 days a year and you hunt for 5 years. Well, you got 50 days in the backcountry. You got 50 days of experience, right?
Yep.
So you're moving the needle, the experience needle. Every year you go, you're moving it 10 days. Well, I'm blessed, okay? I'm super lucky. I hunt elk for 60, 70 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to get the same experience that I get, you'd have to hunt 7 years for 1 year of my experience.
Yep.
And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that's a fact.
Yeah.
So then guys are like, well, what am I going to do? Remember, I said there's two ways. The first way is experience, which that is probably, it's good, right? You can't beat experience.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
You can't beat it, right? But you can't control it either. Mm-hmm. You only have so many days. And you only get so many at-bats, right?
Yep.
But the second way is education. And I can tell you, when I started elk hunting 30 years ago, there was no education. There was no podcast like this. There certainly wasn't no e-scouting elk courses. There wasn't even GPSs when I started. Onyx wasn't even an idea yet.
Yeah.
And I had a compass and a paper topo map when I started. I hate to date myself. I don't know how old you are, but you've probably never even seen a topo map. oh, you're laughing, but it's probably true, isn't it?
It is true. I mean,
Have you actually ever seen a paper topo map?
I know what I'm doing with a compass and a map, and I don't know what I'm doing with a compass and
Well,
a map,
you know so. Enough, but the point is, think about that's the only way we had to navigate. So yeah. It was difficult, and I got lost a few times. I'm just going to be honest. So, but we've got so many resources available to us today, and guys are not taking advantage of them because there's two ways to move the needle: experience, mm-hmm. which you can only get so much, and education.
Mm-hmm.
And so the tools like the e-scouting elk course that I've built, I think it's a great tool, right? That's just me. Here's the thing. If you think you know everything about e-scouting elk and you don't need to take my course, that's great. But what you do need is those Google Earth toolkits. I'm telling you right now, I don't care what level of hunter you're at, it will change the way you do hunt planning. And if it doesn't, It comes with 100% money back guarantee. You just say, it didn't work for me. And that's it. No questions asked. I'm not trying to be too salesy here, but I know how powerful this tool is. Mm-hmm. And I get some heat for building this tool. I got some hate just the other day that I am ruining. I got an email that said, I am ruining Western hunting. And I'm like, really? Because I'm helping people get better at the skill.
Yep.
I would rather share the woods with guys that are more competent than guys that are freaking walking downwind. I mean, blowing elk mm-hmm. out, freaking building fires in the middle of drainages, camped up on top where they can skyline. I see it all, right?
Yep.
I would rather have guys – there's plenty of elk to go around for all of us, right? I would rather have more capable dudes in my area or women than I would have a bunch of yahoos running around.
Absolutely.
Now, that's not my motivation. My motivation is, guys, I spent 30 years learning this strategy, and I wish that somebody would have shared some of this stuff with me in the early days. And they just it just wasn't available. And so when I retired and I moved out here, I said, you know what? I'm going to start. And once I realized, like I said earlier, once I realized that a lot of people just didn't know a lot of this stuff, I said, I'm going to share it. And if people want to pay attention to it, so be it. If they don't, so be it. Mm-hmm. So I've got two products right now. It's the eScouting Elk Course and these Google Earth Toolkits. You can get them together or you can get them separate. They're not, they're mutually exclusive. That one works with the other, but you don't have to get either one. But I've also, if you just can't afford it and you don't, it's not that expensive. It's $100. If you can't do it, guys, I've got every podcast that I've ever been on. And I think I'm at 68. 68 podcasts are in order on my website in the order that I've done them. And the title says what it's, you know, it's whether it's bears or elk or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's all there and it's all free. And if you want to listen to 60 podcasts that I've done, you probably can get a fair amount of what I talk about in the course.
Yeah.
But you just have to decide how you want to approach it.
Yeah.
And, but it's there and it's available and the podcasts are available. And as soon as you put this podcast up, by the time people are listening to this, it'll be available on there as well. Awesome. And I hope this is, you know, you asked me some good questions. I've covered some things that I don't cover in a lot of podcasts. So I think that people will like that motor vehicle use. I don't talk about that enough.
Yeah.
And I feel like guys drop the ball there a lot. They rely on whatever app they're using and that's all they got.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's nothing that will kill a hunt quicker, Caleb, or give you a bad, ruin your mental outlook than driving up to spot A and finding out that a road was open that you thought was closed, or worse, a road that's closed that you thought was open.
Yep.
You're like, oh, it's such a mental letdown, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes those mental letdowns are kind of hard to come back from. And so I always say this all the time is you have to control the things that you can control, right? You have to control the things that you can control because when it comes to elk hunting, or even bear hunting, there's so many things that you can't control, right? So many. Like, yeah. Are the animals there? Are they not? Whatever. I mean, so many things you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can control all the things that you can control, your odds of success are just elevated instantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, going back to, like, having multiple hunt plans, I mean, I've been guilty of it as well, you know, kind of putting all your eggs in one basket, and you get there, and whether the road's closed or there's 10 other trucks parked at the trailhead and you have that moment of panic where you don't have a backup plan. And then you waste a whole day of hunting, trying to find another spot or e-scout another spot off your phone or.
Oh God. I'm glad you said that. I've seen so many dudes on the side of the road on some ridge where they got cell service.
Yep.
And I just know in my heart that they're trying to download maps for an area that they don't have already on their phone.
Yeah.
And yep. Well, I'm just going to be honest.
I've been that guy multiple times.
We've all done it. I've done it. I've had to drive into town. I hate to admit this. I'm supposed to be the king of e-scouting, right? And I'm going to say something I've never said before on a podcast. This was since I've been in Montana. I hate to admit. But we struck out in a first couple spots that I had planned. I mean, we saw elk. There was elk, but we just wasn't what we wanted.
Yeah.
I had to go into town and get a hotel so I could get internet and finish up some hunt playing that I should have done before I freaking got there.
Yeah.
So now I have plenty of days to hunt elk, right? But still, dude, that's an embarrassment, right? Yeah. That is, should have never happened. I got cocky. I'll be honest. I got cocky with my spot. I'm like, this is a money spot. And it was pretty good. I'll be honest. But there was just a few more people in the area than I wanted. And I don't like people. I'm antisocial when it comes to elk hunting. Yep. That's one of the reasons I have llamas. I like to just get, personally for me, now this is not for everybody, but I would rather hunt areas with less elk with no people than areas with tons of elk, but tons of people.
Yeah, I would agree.
I just like the, you know, I like the experience, Cable. I like the experience almost as much as I like the killing.
Yeah.
So I just like to get and just be just nobody around. I just like it. So I seek out those kinds of places. But that's not always the best strategy, because there's an old adage here, guys. If you pull up to a trailhead, and this spot is amazing, right? UV scouted it, and it looks like it's incredible. And you pull up to that trailhead, and there's not a single car there, I'd get a little worried.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in reality, right? If nobody is hunting it, is what? Why? Are they not hunting it because there's no elk there, or are they just, you're just so smart and nobody else has ever figured it out? Now, I'm not saying it could be one or the other, but I'm just saying that
more than likely it's the first one.
A little bit of hunting pressure is not bad, right? Not bad. Now, if there's 97 trucks parked there, that may be a problem.
Yeah.
And horse trailers and everything else, right? But having a car or two at a trailhead, I don't get too worried about that.
No.
Because some ways I'd love to have it to myself, but the other school of thought is, well, maybe there's something to this spot, right? So don't always judge the book by its cover. So you pull up to spot A and there's a truck parked there. Don't always be like, oh man. Because here's the thing. If you go into your spot with that kind of attitude, you're probably not going to give it 100%. So don't let a car or two, don't let it bother you. Don't even let it faze you. You have a plan. You spend a lot of time on this plan. Work the plan.
Yep.
And if the plan doesn't work, then you immediately move to plan two, plan B, because you're ready to go. You already got it worked out. You're not going to miss. Like, I like to have it where I can hunt the mornings and I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it one more morning. If we don't turn up what we're looking for, we're moving to plan B, because I know that it's going to take us 2 hours of drive. It's going to take us 2 hours of hike in. We can be there we can be glassing by dark. If we leave by noon, and I'm like, do you know what kind of confidence that gives me when my hunt plan, when I know that all I've got it all worked out?
Oh yeah,
dude, you're ready to go. You're excited. You're ready to make a move. But if it's the other way around and you're like, man, if we don't find elk this morning, I don't know where we're going to go. We got to go back. We got to go find some cell service and we got to kind of find a new spot. Well, your mental outlook is in a terrible spot, Caleb, at that point.
Definitely. And I mean, when you're going like you're saying, you're going, 20, 30, 40 days elk hunting, losing a day on isn't the end of the world. But when you drive across the country, you only have 5 days to hunt and you lose a day because you got to go back into town. That takes a lot of time out of your hunt.
Oh, man. See, you're a smart guy. You're already putting it together. And that's what I'm saying. Guys, I don't know an elk hunter. I don't know one that doesn't just think about it and live. No, it's not like it's a top priority in their life. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying they look forward to that 10 days in September like not many other things in their life. They just, well, I mean, the hashtag isn't September yet. It's like one of the most popular hunting tags there is, right?
Yep.
We all are just, we can't wait for September. We can't wait to get back in the mountains and chase elk. Well, don't blow it. Don't waste a day. Don't waste a minute. And does that mean you're going to kill an elk? No. But you can't kill an elk if you're not in the game. You're not going to kill one from the hotel while you're downloading your download maps, while you're trying to update your maps. You're not going to kill one because you didn't calculate the driving directions, and now you're lost trying to drive to the next trailhead, and you miss an entire day of hunting. That stuff is – you've got to avoid – I'm going to say it again. You have to control the things that you can control.
Yep.
Because the weather, the animals, the terrain, the fatigue factor, the altitude sickness, there's lots of things you can't control. But we have to control the things we can control. And I just can't say it any more clear than that. And I think if you adopt that approach, you're going to start moving that success needle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I don't want to keep you on here too much longer, and I don't want to give away any more of the secrets that you keep in your core.
So, Caleb, send me your email. Okay. And I'm going to send you both. I'm going to send you the toolkits and the course, and I want you to give me some feedback on it. So then maybe you in the next podcast you do or whatever, you can personally speak to it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it. Yeah.
Okay, bro.
I mean, we're getting to that season where, you know, draw results are coming out, so I'll be e-scouting a ton. So I will put it all to use over the next few weeks.
Let me know if you let me know if you draw an Arizona tag, and at least I can be happy for somebody. Yeah,
for sure. Well, before I let you go, what do you got coming up? I think it was before we even started recording the actual podcast, but you mentioned you're doing some stuff with Outdoor Class.
Yeah. So, I just recorded an educational class for the Outdoor Class, which is kind of it's not part of Go Hunt, but Go Hunt is a big part of Outdoor Class. If you haven't checked it out, they've got some really, really good stuff on there. And they asked me or invited me to record a hunt planning course. So this is, remember we talked about the plan A, plan B, and the strategy of putting it together. This course is specifically focused on that.
Nice.
And it's supposed to come out in August or September. I wish it was coming out earlier, but it takes a while to edit these things. Yep. And I just recorded it a week ago, and I've got to do a few more screen recordings for it, and then they'll start the editing process. But I will tell you, there's one out. They just released John Barklow. The dude's a badass, right?
Yeah.
And they just released his mission planning course, like just a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And so you can check that out. Actually, I always forget this, but if you sign up for Outdoor Class, it's $99 a year, guys. $99 a year to put towards your education is nothing.
Yeah. Especially with the amount of different courses you get on there.
There's like 15 on there, I think, right now.
Yeah, and they're still adding them.
They're adding them all the time. I told you, I just recorded one. But Barklow's just came out, and I haven't taken the whole thing yet. Mm-hmm. But he talks about stoves, and he talks about clothing and cold weather and just great stuff.
Yeah.
But it's available. Use the code TREELINE when you sign up for that. That'll help me out and let them know that I'm actually doing something. Okay. And so you do that. And if you want to do, you do my Treeline Academy, it's available at treelineacademy.net is, my website. And so I did that. And then this weekend, Ryan Lampers and his wife Hillary are coming to my house in Missoula, and we're filming this DIY backcountry meals course.
Awesome.
So we hope to launch it here early summer. And then we're going to finish up, as soon as we finish this meals course, mm-hmm. we're going to finish up our next level bear course, which is, we're both excited about that. We get so many requests. We might have made a mistake deciding to do the meals course before the bears, because we're getting so many messages about this bear course. And so, but we're only two guys. We don't have a whole production studio. And so it takes us a little while to get it done, and we're hunting bears for 40 days. So it's hard to squeeze in all that filming, but we're going to, so our plan is We're going to film a lot of this bear course this year in the field on the hunts. So we're excited about that. We're going to try to do a full end-to-end bear skinning, meat preparation, even cooking meat in the backcountry, rendering the fat in the backcountry to include that in our course. So we're going to film a lot of segments. And we're going to be looking at terrain. Why we like this terrain. Why we like that terrain. Snow. We'll be looking at snow levels. We'll be glassing up, seeing where the snows are, talking about what elevations we're at. So hopefully we can insert all this cool in the field stuff into the course.
Nice. And that's going to be a part of your course, or is it going to be a separate
thing? It's going to be part of Treeline Academy. Okay. So all the courses are separate that we're doing because some people are not interested in one or the other, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to have bundles. You can do the ultimate bundle, get all of them. You can do a bundle and get these two. I mean, we're going to do all kinds of things like that.
Yep.
So, but they're all going to be kind of standalone. Okay. And but there are going to be, you know, discount bundles and things like that. So, but yeah, I'm excited about it. And we love doing our own meals. We love bear hunting. We love elk hunting. So that's kind of our three things. And so that's what we're kind of sticking to. I told you earlier, I'm all about staying in my lane. I like to teach things that I have something to contribute. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to be teaching bushcraft. I'm not going to be teaching wilderness survival. I'm not going to be teaching prepping, how to prep.
Yeah.
But I am going to invite people onto my platform that are experts in those areas and have courses on that down the road. But it's not going to be me teaching them because I'll probably be learning from them. So I want to invite some people that are experts at what they do and get them involved with what I'm doing as well.
Absolutely. Cool, man. Well, I'm excited for all of that. It sounds like some great things you got coming in the future. Okay. But go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say I'll send you an email, and I'd really like to get your feedback on some of this stuff.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. But before I let you go, one question I ask every guest is for a book recommendation. So you mentioned before we started recording, there was a book that your wife just gave you that you were probably going to talk about.
Yeah, it's so I haven't read it yet. But so my wife is all about trying to get me to expand my horizons. You know, so she just sent me, she's been in Florida for a while. And so she just sent me this book. It's called Wild at Heart. And it's Discovering the Secret of a Man's Soul. And so, you know, I don't know if you watched my film this fall with my son hunting elk, but if your listeners haven't watched it, I think it's a great film. But here's the thing. The film was fun, but stick around after the film. Yeah. After the film, Brian Call and Brad Hunt and I, we sat around and we talk about raising our boys in the society today and how hard it is becoming and how distracted these young men are on going on. And not only that is we might be having inflation. We might be having different challenges, but our kids are living in the softest times probably in the history of the world. Meaning that our children are just not, they don't have to do hard things anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I'm all about my son. I told you I'm 57 years old. I'm not getting all theoretical on you guys here, but I'm not going to be around for a lot of his life. So my job is to get that young man ready to roll. Mm-hmm. And so I want him on the edge. I want him in the backcountry doing things that are freaking hard. And I want him discovering what he's capable of doing so that when these people knock on his door and start telling him that he can be a girl if he wants to, and he can do this and he can do that, yeah. I want him armed.
Yep.
And I want him ready to stand on his own two feet. And I think that we're making a mistake with our children by not putting them in difficult, I'm not saying dangerous. I'm saying difficult situation. What is up? Oh man, what's that guy? He says, it's okay for your children to do dangerous things safely or whatever. Yeah. I always love that reel, but you know, I don't mean dangerous. I mean difficult. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm really, really into that. And so my wife just sent me this book, Wild at Heart. So I think that, you know, it'll be a good one. And I'm going to read it. So maybe you guys should read it too.
Yeah, I'll definitely add it to my reading list. It sounds like a good one. Yeah, I agree with all the stuff you were saying there. I don't have kids yet, but I agree with what you're saying of, you know, making them do difficult things. And that's what I try to do personally is, you know, just do difficult things.
Well, your parents obviously instilled that in you a little bit somewhere along the way, right? Somewhere along the way, dad, mom, somebody, grandma, grandpa, whatever. I don't know your background at all. Just met. But somewhere along the way, you acquired that desire.
Yep.
But we don't even realize. I'm blown away sometimes when I'm speaking and I'm talking to people and they're like, well, my son, he's just not, he just won't stop doing his iPad. He won't stop playing game. I'm like, so what you're saying is your son controls the house. Yeah. You don't. I hate to be brutal, but that's a fact.
Yeah.
Well, he won't do this because this is, I mean, really? Really? And I'm like, well, you're contributing to the problem. Yep. And he's not going to thank you for it down the road. Let me just tell you that. No. There is no kid that's ever going to say, Dad, man, I'm so glad that you let me play video games my whole time growing up. And I'm so glad you never made me get out and do anything hard. And I'm so glad that you didn't prepare me for life. And now I'm getting ran over by everyone. I'm just so thankful, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Be real.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to be nasty, but, you know, as men, we got to step up and grow a pair.
Yep.
And with your kids and I'm not talking just your sons. I'm talking your daughters. Your daughters are probably at more risk than your son is. And anyway, that's a whole tirade. But
yeah, that could be a whole other podcast there.
You asked for it. So, but my wife is engaged in that. We homeschool our kids. And because we want to make sure, now they'll probably go to school eventually,
mm-hmm.
but I want to make sure the day they walk into school that they're their own person,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be immovable by pressure and society and bullying and all the things that's happening, that it's just not going to move them. Mm-hmm. And that's my goal. And I don't know if we'll get there, but that's our goal. And we're working pretty hard at it. So
good. Awesome, man.
All right, man. Hey, great podcast. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Real quick before I let you go, how can people find you?
Treelineacademy.net is and then treeline_pursuits on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, I'm pretty good about anytime we got something new coming out, anytime a new podcast comes out, you know, I try to do a good job. I'm only been on social media a few years. So I kind of was one of those guys, I just did my thing, right? And but I'm doing it now because it's kind of like you have to kind of do it if you're going to be in the space.
Uh-huh.
And so Treeline Pursuits on Instagram and treelineacademy.net is where you can find all my stuff about courses and articles and podcasts.
Awesome, man. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to trying out your course, and I'll definitely be in touch with some feedback.
Okay, we'll have to do another follow-up at some point, see how it's going.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks, man.
No problem.
All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to that podcast. Hopefully you guys learned a little bit. Hopefully it'll help you out this season when you're doing some e-scouting. Make sure you guys check out his courses if you enjoyed it so you can learn a little bit more about what we talked about today. But before I let you guys go, again, make sure you guys check out the podcast on social media. It's barely_backcountry_podcast on Instagram. And then my personal is c.dillashaw. Again, make sure you guys give the podcast a like, a follow, a share. All those things help out. I appreciate you guys listening, and I will see you guys next week.